This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it is all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you along for the ride for the next hour on Sirius 216, XM 201, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and podcast on every podcast platform. So however you get your podcast, make sure you type in Horse Racing Radio Network and follow not just Trainer Talk, but all of our shows we bring your way throughout the week. Well, my guest on today's show has been involved with racing for more than 5 decades, but he's really never experienced the type of success he's currently enjoying here in 2023, at least on the training side of things. On Saturday, the native of Lexington, Kentucky, is going to be looking to add to his banner year in a big, big way when he sends out 9-5 morning line favorite Double Crown in the $150,000 Maryland Million Classic. Please join me in welcoming trainer Ray Ginter Jr. to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ray, appreciate the visit, my friend.
Hey, nice to be with you.
You know, we are celebrating a special Maryland Million Week here on the network, and it's all presented by our friends at Anchor and Hope Farm in Maryland. And Double Crown just so happens to be a son of one of their stallions, Bourbon Courage. And man, he is such a nice horse. I think you might describe him as Hickory, because he always shows up and runs his race, doesn't he?
Oh, yes, sir. He leaves it all laying on the track every time. What a wonderful eye Mr. Cash had when he claimed this horse. He's been nothing but good to us. I mean, he is solid.
What do you think makes him so good?
I think when he changed stables over into our barn, the ultimate care that he gets and the new training program that he is on, he has done nothing but elevate.
What's the new training program involved?
Well, you know, you got horses that the training regimen is sometimes too brutal or too hard on them. And where we're at, you know, we adjust to each horse personally. So, you know, this horse here, he don't take a lot of training. He don't need a lot of training. Just keep him happy. He'll run his eyeballs out.
How long does it take you to figure that out, Ray, to figure out what works for each individual horse?
Well, that there comes like a gift. You know, my grandfather did this for 55 years, and my dad did it for over 50, and my grandfather could stand in front of a stall of a horse in 15 minutes, he'd tell you what's going on. Me, myself personally, it was passed down, but it takes me about a day and a half to really get in their head. But then, you know, Some cases, you know, takes a little longer.
Yeah, I mean, do you have to? I'm always curious because I have never trained horses. So when I hear a trainer talk like that, and you talk about your grandfather and how quickly he could pick up on a horse, I'm always curious. Do you have to see him on the track first, or can you kind of just get a sense from being around them?
No, you hit the nail on the head right there. You got to spend time with them. You know, as soon as you get a fresh horse in, you know, you spend time, sit, watch their movements, what they're doing, and then you know what to go to.
Well, 9-5 morning line favorite in the Maryland Million Classic has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
Absolutely, but the horse, you know, himself, he earned it. You know, look at his past performance. Like you said, he's Hickory.
His last race, he wins the Polynesian at Pimlico. He did that on September 10th. Tell me about that race. He drew off and won very impressively.
Yeah, and I mean, we had fired him back real quick at time too, but he thrived on it, and that taught us something new about him as well. But man, he come out of that race like a bear. I mean, just he's ready to go, like 2 days later.
What did he teach you in that Polynesian? You said it taught you something else about him. What was that?
Well, it was the fact that the horse can run back quicker. He don't need a month between races. You know, each horse is different. Like I said, some need 2 months between races, but this horse right here, he's pretty dangerous. I mean, he could run back in like 5 or 6 days, and he thrives on it.
Yeah, and he's a horse that loves Laurel, so that doesn't hurt either. He has a couple of wins, a couple of seconds, and a third from 8 starts. When you come into a race like this, Ray, a big race, and you have the 9-5 morning line favorite or whatever the odds are, you have the morning line favorite, I'm sure every trainer wants to be in that position, right? It's better than saddling a 30-1 shot.
Well, the only bad part, the only drawback on that is if you don't get there, you ain't got no excuse. When you saddle the 30-1 long shot, you say, "Hey man, I was 30-1. I run second," you know. But when you're 9-5, you better be on your toes.
Tell me more about the owners, Built Right Stables.
This wasn't even possible without Lynn Cash and his wife Lola, Built Right Stables. What wonderful people they are. They make racing fun. Is what they do. I mean, they're a joy to work with and work for. There's never There's never any animosity. Whatever you suggest or say to Mr. Cash or Miss Cash, oh, okay, if that's what we got to do, we'll do it. And boom, it's done. There's no second guessing.
Isn't that nice? Yeah, and so many trainers have come on this show over the years, and they said that one thing that makes their job easy is when they do get those relationships with their owners, and the owners let them train the horse. It's a wonderful relationship. It goes back and forth. They talk about different things, but it's the trainer who knows the horse best, and that's what really makes the difference.
I think it goes all the way on down to the groom, the hot walker, because if you ain't got the kind of quality of help in your barn, you're going to come up short, and it goes all the way down even to your exercise rider, your feeder. You know, everybody, it's a team effort, so it ain't just the trainer. Everybody's involved.
Yeah, it takes a village. Tell me about some of those people, Ray, that help you and work with Double Crown, but work with all your horses.
Well, you know, we have Blas Hernandez, which is assistant trainer here at the Thoroughbred Training Center in Lexington. He worked for Mr. Tom Amos for a few years, and he brought that experience with him. And then we have Troy Balsinger up at Laurel as assistant trainer, and a ton of an experience right there. And then we have Matt Bennings over at Charlestown, which came out of Russell Springs, Kentucky, which is probably one of our most important keys to the racing. And like I say, we all click and kind of work together, but each trainer, each assistant trainer, has the kind of quality of help that it takes to make success. And if there's a weak link, we have to kind of chop that one out and fix it.
And talking with trainer Ray Ginter Jr., getting ready to saddle Double Crown Saturday in the Maryland Million Classic. You've heard me mention he is the morning line favorite in that race. It's a wonderful position to be in. And as Ray pointed out, it's not just him. It takes a village. We talk about that an awful lot on Trainer Talk because, Ray, so many trainers tell me on this show that without their help, it's not possible for them to have that kind of success.
Oh, you're exactly right. And two, like I say, with the Cashes, Mr. and Ms. Cash, you know, money's a bonus. Yes, it's good to win and make the money because that's what supplies the stable. But, you know, they love racing. And when you make racing fun, the money comes.
You know, so, you've you've won stakes races, but to win a race like the Maryland Million Classic, I mean, it's Maryland's day at the races. Maryland is steeped in racing history. What would that mean for Ray Ginter?
It would be probably the most important race of my career, sir. Like I say, the Polynesian was big. We win the Timonium Juvenile with Sweet Sotted Jay. Had big hopes for him, still do. He'll come back around. We just ran him in at Champaign, and it was a bit too far for him, but he's a really nice horse. You'll hear more from him. But, you know, you get back to Double Crown. I mean, them horses are few and far between. They don't come along very often.
Yeah, it's special when they do.
Yes, sir. And the Maryland Million, you know, to win that, to have your name up in that marquee, I mean, that's a real big thing. Like I say, I've took care of some really nice horses in my past. But to win the Maryland Million would really be something.
I mentioned, Ray, that this year has been a banner year for you. You look at what you've done throughout your career, and you see here in 2023, 20 victories to your credit, 19 seconds, 20 thirds. Your horses are showing up, and they're running. But that 20 wins is far and away the best of your career for a single season. What's been the key this year?
Well, like I said, I've been doing this for 58 years. And I've never had the opportunity to be around this caliber of horses. And Mr. Cash came to me, and we was friends before this. A couple of years ago. And, you know, I kind of helped him along. He's young and new to the business, and he has a trainer's license as well. So he can pull his trainer's license out at any second and say, Ray, it's been fun. But 2 months ago, maybe 2.5 months ago, he decided to let me be his trainer. Him and Miss Cash decided to let me be the trainer for Built Right Stables. And, you know, that's where all the wins came from so quickly. But, it took 2.5 months to get them back up to this level from where they was. They was kind of struggling, and things has got good now, so. Everything's on the upswing.
Ray, how do you describe your approach to training horses, or maybe your philosophy when it comes to training?
Well, the main thing, my grandfather taught me a long time ago. He said the main thing to any racehorse is to make sure the horse is happy. If the horse is not happy, the rider ain't going to be happy. The trainer ain't going to be happy, and the horse ain't going to be making no money, so the owner sure ain't going to be happy. So the key to training horses is to be with the animal as much as possible and know what they like and don't like and keep them content and happy. That's the key to training. Keep your horse happy and sound, healthy, happy and sound.
It sounds so simple and so easy.
Oh, it's not.
How do you keep a horse happy?
Well, I mean, there again, you got to go back to see what they like or dislike. And, you know, some of them you can turn them around to your way of thinking, but that kind of goes against the grain. And it don't work out too well that way. So, like I say, the main thing is just to keep the horse, you know, in an environment where they are just, I mean, thriving. That's just like Double Crown. He is thriving.
You talk about spending time with the horses. How much time do you spend around your horses, Ray?
Well, I'm in the barn every morning at 4:30. And I usually leave around somewhere between 11 and noon. Then we come back in the evenings and feed time for the evening. Of course, they eat breakfast at 4:30 in the morning. And they're getting lunch at 8:30, so they eat their dinner at 5. That's another key to training horses. You got to have them on schedule. You know, their eating habits are on schedule. They are a creature of nature. What you present to them is what they get used to. So I'd say roughly out of a day, you would spend at least 8 hours with all your horses.
Mm. Wow. Well, you would think with all that time that you would get to know them pretty well.
Yes, sir. And like I say, you know, I never have been a horseman that, you know, has time to sit in clubhouses and wine and dine the owners. And I mean, that would be fun, I'm sure. You know, and there's trainers like that. That's what they do. And they got guys like me in the barn called assistant trainers. So, you know, I'm not really trying to knock anybody, but I just like to be a hands-on guy with all my horses.
You know, I've talked to so many assistants over the years, and they'll talk about the amount of time and effort, and, you know, just like a head trainer would, they put in a lot of time, maybe even more in some cases. What's different between being the head guy, the main trainer, and being the assistant trainer? What are the primary differences?
Well, that goes back to the owner. The owner looks to me, you know, for if something goes awry, falls apart, then okay, what happened, right? That don't fall back on your assistants. Then it's my job to go to whichever track it is. All right, what I go to my assistant at that point, and I get the answer. But fortunately, we don't have much of that. I mean, like I say, I've been doing this for the Cashes for about 2.5 months, and we've only had one incident, but it got resolved quickly. So, you know, you just got to have good, sound, quality help people that know what you're doing.
Tell me a little bit more about your grandfather and your dad. You mentioned your grandfather's philosophy and how good he was around a horse. Tell me more about them, where they trained, and what their background was.
Oh, yes, sir. My grandfather, he worked for Dixie Anna Farm in Lexington, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Mary Fisher, if you know the Chevrolet Body by Fisher, that's who she is. Of course, a lot of the horse people know who Mary Fisher is in Dixie Anna Farm. But he worked for her 55 years. Of course, he worked past Social Security age days. He never had a driver's license. And the farm van would pick him up, and Miss Mary went to my grandfather, and of course he took care of hard work and them good horses out there. And Miss Mary came to him. She said, "Johnny," she said, "you can't get on the van no more. I can't pay you. You're past Social Security age." He said, "Ah, that's all right, Miss Mary." So the van would go by and still pick him up at 4:30 in the morning. That was his life. And he had the same barn for 55 years. I mean, you could eat off the blacktop shed row. The brass was polished, wooden walls. The yearlings, he took care of the yearlings like gold. And there was a lot of success through that barn. And one afternoon, 4:30, they went out to pick him up, and the yearlings was left out. First time in 55 years, the yearlings was left out.
Mm.
They said, "Well, we got a problem here." So he had a big wooden spool in the tack room, and he always would eat his lunch, and he had a drop-down bed on the wall with chains, and he crawled up there and went to sleep and went on to heaven. So he died doing what he enjoyed. So,
wow.
But my father, he brought me around when I was 8 years old in the barn. Of course, I've always been overgrown anyway. You know, after school was out, we would go to the training center on Paris Pike in Lexington, and we would train horses from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 8 o'clock at night. And he had 5 horses, and I was brushing them and rubbing them and shaking stalls and giving them baths. I mean, that's a full grown man's job. I just thought it was fun and game. And that's where I got my start. But my dad did this for, like I say, 48 years as well. And he was very successful with bunch of cripple horses. He had a bunch of unsound horses that was really cheap horses, but he would take horses from other people that couldn't run and had soundness issues, and he would get them well and work on them, and we'd win races with them. And then myself, I was put in the barn when I was 8, so I worked for numerous people along the way. Like I said, I go as far back as I was the one that held John Henry's head when they castrated him for Bubba Snowden, Hal Snowden Jr. at Fairfield Farm.
Wow.
I worked for his daddy, Harold Snowden. He owned the Stallion Station. I worked for Mr. Leslie Combs at Spindthrift Farm when he owned it. I worked for Mr. John R. Gaines for 5 years. I took care of Leaf Art, Ice Capade, Exploding, and Vaguely Noble for 5 years. It was a really good job. That is when Leaf Art stood for $350,000 a cover, no guarantee. And if you wanted the guarantee, it was a half million, but he had a 98% fertility rate. So, but that's back when racing and stallions was at their peak.
Yeah. Yeah, those are some legendary names, too, including where you started with your grandfather in Dixiana and that story. You know, those, when you think about the lore and the legend and the mystique of racing and the industry, those are incredible names that you've just thrown out.
Well, see, Gainesway sits right beside the trains around Paris Pike, and I had two horses at the trains around train. I trained them in the mornings before I punched the clock in at Gainesway at 7, so... Anyway, I was asked by a certain person, while you're on your vacation, your three-week paid vacation, you might want to find you another job because you can't train horses and come over here because it may spread some kind of disease, which I always change shoes and clothes while I handle the stallions. But anyway, Mr. Joe Taylor, God rest his soul, what a wonderful man he was. He even built tailor-made farms. But Joe Taylor came to me and said, hey, take you an extra week, get you 4 weeks vacation. If you want to come back, you come back any day you want to. He said, but if you can better yourself and you want to train horses, he said, go ahead. So I ended up picking up about 20 head at Keeneland. I had 20 horses and barned 21 at one time for a gentleman named Robert Sims. Mm-hmm. And he had horses with Bruce Levine, Shug McGahee, Ray Lawrence, all at the same time, and they all got ready to leave town. He decided he wanted to leave his horses home, so he left them with me. And I trained for him a couple of years. But this has really been the best year of my career, is working for Bent Right Stables and Lynn and Lola Cash. Like I say, they're not like owners. They're like your friends. Hey, let's go have a good time. Let's get this done. You know, whatever a horse needs, get it for them. You know, let's just take care of business and enjoy this.
You know, Ray, this industry is so much different now than it was 58 years ago. Every industry and every aspect of life is different now than it was 58 years ago when you first started in racing. Talk about some of the most significant changes that you've seen, whether it's been on the stallion side, the breeding side, or the racing side.
Well, the biggest change I've seen is what's came lately, and you know what I'm talking about, is this new group that's been put into place called HISA, or HISA, whatever you want to call it, H-I-S-A. But they've implanted so many different rules. I mean, just take, for instance, the shoe rules. You can't have toe grabs or stickers or block heels or jar corks, which is always called traction control. All right, you take a football player, one of these NFL football players, let them run down the field with no cleats on or drop back to throw a pass, they're going to rip a groin muscle or something. I mean, they got traction. I mean, these horses don't have traction control no more, and they wonder why there's so many breakdowns. Well, right there, I mean, it don't take no Einstein to figure this out, but they've took that away. I mean, they've took so much away from the game that it's just, it's really, really hard to, you better have 99.9% soundness. A horse can't be arthritic. They've even went as far as some places you can't even stand a horse in ice. Athletes take ice baths for therapy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just, that's the downside of the racing. But I don't know, with the hopes of a judge and maybe the HPBA would step up and what it's going to do, it's just going to trickle on down. It's just down to the vets and the trainers right now. It's going to go to the sale ring, because if you can't take care of a horse the way they should be took care of, why buy them? All right. Then when the sale ring starts losing out on the sales, why is people going to breed them? So there goes the stallion fees. Then you're going to have the breeding. These big farms like Claiborne, Gainesway, Spendthrift, Calumet, you're going to have all these people involved. And then somebody's going to finally say, enough's enough. Because it's going to destroy the racing thoroughbred business.
Ray, if you were a young man just getting started in the game today in this environment, do you think you would have done it?
I'd run the other way. Absolutely. I mean, I have so much love in my heart and my blood. I mean, once you get around this, I tell you what, once it gets in your blood, you can't get away from it. It's mm-hmm. it's worse than crack cocaine, buddy. It's worse than a disease. I mean, you either love it or you don't come around it, because you can't get compensated by money for the work that you do. There are so many hours that you put in that you ain't going to get paid for, but that's okay. You're getting paid for. You know what they say? The best thing for a human being's insides is these animals' outsides. Just be around them, see how soothing that is. That's yeah. worth a lot.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, again, so many people have told me that, you know, there's a lot of all of the negative headlines that are out there are the things people want to talk about. But there is 98% good in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And it all comes back to the horse and the love of the horse. And there are so many people, Ray, in this sport that are obsessed with the horse and the care of the horse and making sure that horse is as sound and as well taken care of as possible. And to me, you know, those are the stories that just need to be told and need to be out there. But it's not sexy. It doesn't sell because it's not bad news.
Well, yeah. Exactly,
but it's the reality.
Right. That's exactly right. And it's just like, I'll knock on wood before I say this. And I give God the praise, honor, and glory that it's never happened to me. But sometimes you got to know where to draw the line on a horse, because you go over that line, you will leave one laying on the track somewhere, somehow, some way. I have, to my career today, I've never left a horse laying on track, never broke a leg, never had one go down. And I've been very fortunate. And I, like I say, I knock on wood before I said it, and I ain't trying to jinx myself now. But, you know, I've seen people do some things that was just really unethical, and you can't do that.
Ray Ginter Jr., my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Ray, we're up against the break. I've got to get to the break here at the bottom of the hour. Stay with me. We'll continue this conversation and spend more time looking back on the legends that you've been around. John Henry, Forgo, Leafard. So many good ones. We'll talk about that in the second half of the program. Stay with me. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
In November, we have our big sale, and we call it the Night of the Stars, because it truly is one star after the next.
You get all the best stakes fillies from around the country, if not the world.
You know, it's like a Hall of Fame scenario. See the best of the best.
Whether you're a consigner, you're a buyer, or you're just a fan of the sport, it's the one you want to be watching.
This is the biggest night on the sales calendar in the world.
The Phasic Tipton November Sale, Tuesday, November 7th in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you sell? Join the Maryland Jockey Club in celebrating the 38th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day on Saturday, October 14th at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races and enjoy a great day of racing, on-track entertainment, hat contest hosted by Hats by Marge, and more. Meet us at Laurel Park on Saturday, October 14th. Visit laurelpark.com for details. First post, 11:30 a.m.
Achieve Equine, makers of Flair Equine Nasal Strips, brings you innovative, evidence-based products for the health and well-being of your equine athletes. Like the new Impact Protection Half Pad from Europe, VIP Equestrian, that provides a superior layer of cushioning for the horse's back. Visit AchieveEquine.com for more information on the innovative products we offer. That's AchieveEquine.com. Breathe easy. We've got your back.
This is Maryland Million Week on HRRN, presented by Anchor and Hope Farm.
Anchor and Hope Farm is proud to support Maryland's Day at the Races, and this year is excited to announce a whopping 17 runners on the Jim McKay Maryland Million Day program, sired by their stallions. Seven by track record-setting millionaire Bourbon Courage, six by the fastest son of Street Cry Holy Boss, and four by Imagining. Anchor and Hope wishes best of luck to all runners and their connections. Meet the Anchor and Hope Stallions at anchorandhope.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Three back to Double Crown, and Be Better has to pick it up under a drive now with a quarter to go at Pimlico. Three across the track. Unoho! Unoho gets ahead in front. Now Be Better stoking up a run on the far outside. Switches deep, deep to the center of the track is Be Better's Abracadabra on the inside. Double Crown is coming right on through. Double Crown with a ground-saving run. A narrow lead from Unoho. It's Double Crown and Geron Barbosa. And Double Crown takes the Polynesian and going away style to win by four. Unoho is second and Be Better than Zabracadabra in our national parade.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Faisig Tipton. Mike Penna with you, as always, on a brand new edition of the show. That was Dave Rodman with the call of the Polynesian Stakes at Pimlico on September 10th, won by Double Crown. You heard me talk about Double Crown with his trainer, Ray Ginter Jr., in the first half of the program. We'll continue to talk more about the morning line favorite for this Saturday's Maryland Million Classic here in just a moment. We're also going to look back on some of the other legendary horses that Ray has had the opportunity to be around early on in his career and throughout the years he's been involved in the game. But before we do that, I want to remind you that if you missed any portion of this program or any of our shows we bring your way throughout the week, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast whenever you get time, and you can also do that on every podcast platform, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Podbean or Google or Spotify. Type in Horse Racing Radio Network, and you'll be able to listen to all of our shows at your leisure. Take us with you wherever you may be traveling, and we love having you with us each and every week. Follow us, too, on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and YouTube and Instagram, to keep in touch with all the programming and all the guests that we have for you every week here on the network. Well, Double Crown, impressive in the Polynesian. Ray, you talked about how good that race was, how well Double Crown came out of it as he prepares for the Maryland Million Classic on Saturday. One thing we didn't talk about was his rider, Geron Barbosa. Tell me a little bit more about him.
Young man, very young man, class act, absolutely can horseback. He's very intelligent, makes smart moves. He has a game plan. Before he comes to the pack, he will listen to you, but then he will suggest, this is what maybe we should do, and best be listening to him. Like I say, he's a very intelligent race rider.
That's really interesting, and we should talk about that for a minute. Oftentimes, we see trainers in the paddock before the race, and they give a jockey instructions, and they give them a leg up and send them on their way. Of course, as we know, when the gates open, things change, and it's up to the jockey to make split-second decisions. But that give and take between a trainer and a jockey after the races, before the races, how does that work, and how much does a trainer, or should a trainer, listen to what the rider has to say?
Oh, I think 100%, because to start with, good riders don't need instructions. Bad riders, they ain't even going to understand instructions. So the best thing to do is talk about the weather if you got a bad rider. But you try to ride the best caliber rider that you can get for your horse. And Geron Barbosa, he fits Double Crown, I mean just like a glove. They're like peas and carrots. They go together so well. There's never a doubt as to how the race will come out, because you're going to get not 100%, but 110% from Geron.
You talk about him fitting the horse. Do trainers actively look for a jockey that will fit a certain, let's say a jockey's a really good gate rider, and the horse likes to get out of the gate and go to the front. Let's say a horse is a horse that likes to come from behind, and you want to jockey with soft hands and get the horse to relax early in the race. Are those things that all are part of a trainer's job?
Yeah, well, it's very important that you get a knowledgeable rider. Barbosa don't even ride in the afternoons. He comes by the barns in the mornings, and he gets on these horses, and he has the knowledge of each horse before he even sees them in the afternoons. He's a very, like I say, energetic worker. He's in the barn waiting to go to track. Track opens at 6. He's on the track in the mornings. So, I mean, he's not just an afternoon rider. And if say you make a mistake and put somebody on that ain't never seen the horse, and you know, somebody that you're not comfortable with that you don't even know, and well, he's got a big name. Well, you know, they may ride harder for somebody like Steve Asmussen or Bill Mott than they would for Ray Ginner, because my name ain't up there as big as them other guys. But you know, we try to stay within our reach of the class of riders that will ride for us. I mean, J.D. Acosta, another very capable rider, has won many races for us. William Humphrey, and there's a young lady coming around right now at 19 years old, Martina Rojas. She's a bug rider, which that's, you know, as a young rider, she's still got a 5-pound bug, but she's very knowledgeable of a horse and can horseback as well. So, you know, we've got a colony of riders, but when we run at Keeneland or Churchill, places like that, we most usually ride Rafael Bayerano or Saez. You know, one of them riders ride hard for us. So, but when you got horses, you know, like the Cashes, horses like Pirate Rick, Sir Alfred James, my God, what an animal he is. You know, they got plenty of cannons other than Double Crown. Sweet Soddy J, just, you know, 2-year-old on the move. It's going to be a great year next year as well. So,
yes, yeah, Sir Alfred James.
Sir Alfred James, my God, what an animal. You talking about a racehorse.
Yeah, tell me more about Sir Alfred James.
Oh, it doesn't matter what track he goes to. You know, he's going to show up every time. It don't like he throws clunkers, you know, throw in a bad race. But he's just all class. Beverly Park, how about him? He was the winningest horse in North America last year. Won 15 races last year. I mean, Wayne Cash has done so well with him. He was off of a $12,500 claim. Horses made over $500,000.
Yeah, incredible. You know, and I've noticed, too, when you go back through the past performances of the horses that you're training, you're not afraid to take your shot in a graded stakes race when a horse comes out of an impressive allowance win or whatever it might be. It might not always work out, but I think a trainer has to take their shot to find out exactly where their horse stands and how they stack up against some of the better competition, don't they?
Right.
I remember Wayne Lucas, you know, telling me that one time that, you know, you're not going to win it if you're not in it. And that's why Wayne has been known for pulling rabbits out of a hat in these big races. Well, it's because of the fact that he's in them. He's running in them. And you can't win it if you're not in the starting gate.
Well, that's Mr. Cash's theory. You can't win it if you ain't in it. And he said the only race he's ever lost is the one he wasn't in.
Right.
And, you know, he calls it swinging from the fence as well. He said, sometimes you just got to swing from the fence. And guess what? Look what happened in the Kelso. He swung from the fence, and guess who won it? Double
yeah.
Crown.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned some unbelievable names in the first half of the program. John Henry, Forgo, Leafart. Tell me about some of these legends that you had the chance to be around and some of the stories you remember about them.
Well, John Henry, Bubba Snowden, Hal Snowden Jr., they call him Bubba. He had sold John Henry for, like, let's see, the first time was $1,200. And they people called back a week later and said, you can have him back for $1,000. Because he was a rogue. He was very uncontrollable. And we went and got him back. And they let him get out of hand in a week's time. He learned some new tricks. He would turn around. And he sold him again for $1,500. Then people only had him 2 days. They didn't even want their money back. And we went and got him. And he got me down in the shed row, tore all the wall boxes down. I mean, he was mauling me. He was, like I say, he was bad. And Bubba came out of his office, which was in the loft. What is all that racket? He said, I told him. He said, call Doc B and cut him, castrate him right now. And when they castrated this horse, the horse actually flooded tears. It wasn't just like the drainage from sinus. He you can tell he's crying. I went and gave him a soccer ball that day, and I told Bubba, I said, whatever you do, don't sell this horse again. He'll make you a runner. I never seen one that had that kind of heart that cried over that. Well, he sold him for $2,500 the next time. And you know the rest of the story. He went 3 Arlington Millions, so. And he died the day he died at Horse Park, he died with a soccer ball. So that was John Henry. Mm. But like I say, I've took care of a lot of nice stallions for Gainesway Farm, Lee Ford, I mean, his son, a Northern Dancer. They didn't come no better than him. What a gentleman he was in the breeding shed. He wasn't no rough horse or anything. You know, it's just always a joy and a pleasure to be around them kind of horses because, you know, it's class.
They talk about the look of eagles and what you see in the eyes of a good horse. Is that a real thing, Ray?
Well, my dad taught me a long time ago. He said, you can stand back and watch one, especially on race day, and they get that far away look in their eye. He said, you pretty much go to the window and bet on them. He said, that's when you can tell when you got your horse right. You know, when you see a horse walk into a paddock, you can tell by the way they carry themselves. And once again, the eye, you know, they carry the eye of the tiger if they're a true champion. Tell them to take a look at Double Crown this weekend when he comes in the paddock. They'll see nothing but class.
Do good horses know they're good?
Absolutely. And they know when they win, too. I mean, it's just like, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, you know, they get pumped up. They win these ball games. And, I mean, they get to where they can't hardly stand themselves. You see what they did in their careers? Well, these horses are the same way. I mean, but now you take some of this less fortunate, you know, the cheaper horses. Yeah, they'll win one here and there for you, but if you're not careful, you know, what they win, they'll eat up and it'll cost you more. So, you know, training horses is not cheap. It's very expensive. So,
have you ever been around another horse that was as nasty and mean as John Henry was before he was gelded?
Oh, many of them. Kennedy
really?
Kennedy Road over at Spencer Farm. Poker at the stallion station for Hal Snowden Sr. I mean, the only way you could pull his mane was to, and I mean, when you latched on to him in the paddock, he come galloping to his mares to breed him. You washed him off on his way with a hose, and you cut his mane off with a knife, and that's about the only time you could handle him. Really savagey. But, you know, Far Away Son, he came with a letter from France. This horse had done killed one, put two in the hospital, and he come to Gainesway Farm from France, and that letter come 2 weeks in advance. And when he got to Bluegrass Field, Sally went over and loaded him up and put him in a box van, and when he got to Gainesway Farm, which was, 10 miles, he had done dismantled the inside of that van, broke his halter. There he stood. The stallion manager back then was Marion Gross. He said, well, he said, just back the van up to the main breeding shed. And, I mean, that's all we could do to get him in cotton corralled into a stall.
Wow.
And he was so bad, they had to put a block and tackle above the horse rack and pull him up on a pulley, pull his front end up off the ground so you could horse him before he breed a mare. I mean, he killed you.
Wow. Do you think that sometimes that tenacity and nastiness is what also leads to making them such good racehorses?
Well, far away son, I don't know his whole story, but he never did impress me racing or breeding, but he was just mean and nasty. I thought he was a waste of time. I told Mr. Gaines one day, we were sitting at the water tank, smoking. John Gaines was smoking, buddy. He come down, hey, let me get a cigarette. I'd hand him a pack. He'd hand me one back, and he'd sit there on that tank and smoke that whole pack. He just, don't tell my wife. And he'd come back a couple of days later and bring another carton down. Here you go. That way we've got plenty. But anyway, I told Mr. Gaines, I said, I don't even know why you got garbage like that on the farm for. And lo and behold, he made a stallion out of him here in the U.S. I mean, he bred a few state winners. But he knew how to cross the bloodlines. That's what made the runners, you know. You had to match the mare's genes with the stallion's genes and the dosage and the bloodlines. And Mr. Gaines was really smart. That, and Joe Taylor, he was a stallion manager at the time. And they don't come no better than them two guys.
Yeah, two legends in the thoroughbred industry for sure.
I was very fortunate to even be able to work for him.
Yep. Yep, talking with Ray Ginter Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ray, when you mentioned being in the business now for 58 years, when you think back on these 58 years, one of the great things that makes the sport so special is getting to meet some unbelievable people. And you just mentioned Mr. Gaines and Mr. Taylor and all those legends on the breeding side of things. Who are some of the other people that have helped you along the way and touched you that you're never going to forget?
Victor Torres, my veterinarian. I mean, he probably one of the most phenomenal veterinarians you'd ever meet in your life. You know, Robert Sims, he owned Burt Smith's farm. Him and his wife, Dottie, they was very good to me and my family. Just owners of runners. He was the one who bred Silverhawk, if you remember that name. We foaled and raised him. And of course, he win a couple big races. But, you know, the list can go on and on. Like I said, I worked for Mr. Leslie Combs, the Spencer Farm. Johnny Simmons was stallion manager then, and that's when Grazer Native and Candy Road and all them was out there.
Mm. Wow.
So I'm kind of what they call old school.
Yeah.
I go way back.
Okay, old school. We hear that term thrown around a lot when you talk about people like, let's say, Shug McGahee, for example. Well, he does things. He's old school. He does things a certain way. Bill Mott, he's old school. What does old school mean in racing?
Got a very, very good story about Shug McGahee, and you can ask Shug yourself. Bubba Snowden got a phone call from the Phippses. Okay, we was at Fairfield Farm, and Shug was sitting on the fence. I was standing there, and Bubba was on his phone, and he said, well, Mr. Phipps, and he said, I need a trainer in New York. Well, he sent Shug. I said, why didn't you send me, Bubba? He said, I like keeping you around me. That way you can go get my ribs for me, you and Betsy, my dog, at Rottweiler. And, I mean, I said, well, Bubba, you know, that's a chance in a lifetime. That's when Shug went to work for Ogden Phipps. I was within a hair of being able to go there, so.
You know, there's a guy who is one of the great ambassadors for the sport, right? Shug loves this game and this industry so much. He's had so much success. And, I mean, what a wonderful spokesperson he would be for the sport of thoroughbred racing.
Oh, yeah. And also Reed McGahee.
Yes.
What a horseman he is. I mean, first-class horseman.
There's a big difference, Ray, between a horseman and a trainer, isn't there?
I believe so. I mean, you've got some people that I don't know how they got a trainer's license. But it goes back, you know, we was talking about old school and horsemanship. And, you know, we go back to the thing that we talked about earlier, which is called Heisel. You know, you cannot bring the old school stuff to the table and use it no more. I mean, you're not allowed to do a lot of the certain things to take care of these animals properly, the way they should be took care of, because we've got handcuffs on us, and we have veterinarians, trainers, and some of the trainers, like you just said, there's a difference between trainers and horsemen. But you got trainers that's just jumping out of this business left and right because, you know, they can't care for the horses. That's most of your old school horsemen. The new trainers, well, yeah, it's all right with them because they wouldn't know what to do the old school way anyway.
Right, right. Yeah, this is their ground zero. This is where they're starting from.
Well, sure, they learned it on a computer or a laptop somewhere. I mean, you know, it's just like anything else. You know, I took my trainer's test. I got a trainer's license when I was 15, lied about my age. I got my driver's license when I was 16. But, yeah, I took my test under Keen Dangerfield at Keeneman. And I'm telling you, he was very strict. You better know what you was doing when you went in there. Today's test is nothing compared to back what we had to go through. I mean, It's just like almost here, we'll just go ahead and give you your license. Go ahead and give it a try.
Talking with trainer Ray Ginter Jr. here on Trainer Talk presented by Faisig Tipton. Ray, if you could go back in time and you could relive one race, one moment in your career that you will always cherish. You could do it all over again tomorrow. What's that moment? What's that race going to be for you?
It would be the Russell Road at Charlestown when Sir Alfred James won it. We had three horses in that race. One of them was set in the early fractions, called the Rabbit. The other two was called Hounds. Sir Alfred James was laying way too close, and I mean, he just door blowed them turn around. That was probably the biggest race of my career, other than the day my father saddled a horse, and it was Steve Coffin's second win of his career. I mean, this horse had been getting beat double digits in its last 10 starts, and Steve Coffin went off at 12. So, you know, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, incredible. You know, and
yeah, I mean, there you go. You go back to certain riders fitting horses, and we tried everything. We just took everything off the horse and put a bridle on, put Coffin up, and he just rose. And it wasn't like we dropped him in class or anything because he's already on the bottom. And we was lucky that he would even ride him. But it was his second career win, too, so he was just young.
Yeah, he wasn't Steve Coffin at that point.
Right, right.
Not the Hall of Famer that we went on to know, the Triple Crown winner. He turned out to be pretty darn good. Hey, maybe you guys can say now, hey, you gave him his start, right?
Well, we kindly helped, yeah. It was at River Dams.
I love
back
it.
Back in the 70s.
Such a cool story. Ray, we're down inside the final 5 minutes or so, coming down to the wire on this week's Trainer Talk show. I always like to wind down the program by asking trainers to let us know something about them that we haven't talked about yet. So any other hobbies or interests? You mentioned a few athletes throughout the program here, so I'm assuming you're kind of a sports guy.
Well, I enjoy going to church myself. You know, and once again, everything, any trainer, any horseman, anybody to do with the backside or the animal, but we all got to remember who all this belongs to. I mean, all this belongs to God, and if we ain't good stewards with it, he's blessed us with what we're doing. He blessed us with Double Crown. So if we're not a good steward with what we do with him, then the horse ain't going to show up, and he'll be took away from us and get somebody else. That's why you got to be careful in this business, because year after day, but keep yourself humble, because if you don't, you can be gone by tomorrow. As far as sports, I like to go watch my grandchildren. You know, I've got 11 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren.
Wow.
I got a beautiful family. I got a wonderful wife. She takes rather good care of me. And like I say, once again, behind every successful man is a good woman. I mean, you cannot be successful without a good woman. So I give credit where it's due. And like, once again, I want to go back to Lola and Lynn Cash. You know, without Built Right Stables, this would never happen for Ray Ginner. I mean, I was just a virtual nobody. That's just, you know, trained horses all of his life here and there and went a few races. But they placed caliber horses in my care, and it's worked out pretty good.
Well, I can tell you, Ray, you're not a nobody anymore, because you're on Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, my friend, and everybody knows your story now. So I'm sure you're going to have a lot of people cheering for you on Saturday with Double Crown and all the other horses you just mentioned that are going to be making their way throughout their careers and on to big races moving forward. It's been an incredible ride for you, and I'm so happy for the success you're experiencing this year, my friend.
I sure appreciate it, sir.
Yeah, my best to you and to your family. Good luck keeping up with those 11 grandkids. I don't know how the heck you're doing that.
They keep me busy. They'll call every now and then, probably just when they want something, but that's okay. That's what papaws are for. Whether it be money or knowledge, it don't matter. Well, what should I do here, papaw? Well, okay, let's figure it out, and we'll fix it.
Spoil them as much as you can, Ray.
Absolutely. Jack them up on candy and send them home. They come down about 3 days later.
Ray, it's been a delight to hear your story. Thank you for taking the time. All the best moving forward, and good luck on Saturday in that Maryland Million Classic, my friend.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. And from Built Right Stables, they appreciate you as well.
All right. My thanks to Ray Ginter Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. What a story. What a background. 58 years in the business, and here he is, all this time gone by, and here he is enjoying the best year of his training career, thanks to Built Right Stables and the connection that he's made there, and them saying, you know what, Ray, we want you as our trainer. I mean, sometimes the way life works is crazy like that, right? It's just that one break. He waited 58 years for this break. Boy, it would be great to see him standing in the winner's circle at Laurel on Saturday. Incredible stories. My thanks to Ray Ginter Jr. for taking time to join me here. If you missed any portion of Trainer Talk, do yourself a favor. Head back and check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts and Google and Spotify and Podbean, however you get your podcast. Make sure you listen there as well, and take all of our shows with you wherever you go throughout the week. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio. For Ray Ginter Jr., I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to this edition of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.